This is the Citizen of Heaven podcast, my report for the week of April 6th through 12th. I'm Hal Hammonds, Citizen of Heaven. I'm here with a behind-the-scenes look at what's going on in my life and the life of this podcast. The reports are getting basically the same sort of traction that the regular episodes are getting, so for now, I'll be keeping it up. If you have ideas for what to include here, other than my reading list, please feel free to share. Before I start the show, let me encourage you to subscribe to the podcast if you have not already done so. If you have, and it's been a blessing to you, please consider sharing it and giving it a good review. Today I want to tell you about romance novels, why I tend to avoid them, one that fell across my path this week, why I read all 500 pages of it, and the general problems I have with the genre. Let's get started. I want to give you a bit of a heads up about next week's episode and the book that prompted it. I have become a big Mark Kurlansky fan in the last few weeks. This week's episode about Salt featured his book, cleverly entitled Salt, and I found it outstanding. And seeing a fish episode on the horizon, I noticed that Kurlansky had a book about cod entitled Cod. And I thought, well, let's grab that and see what happens. I paid $7.50 for that book, and I actually was pleased to do so. It's a great book, and it will lend to an interesting conversation for 4.5 to 5 minutes or so of Tuesday's podcast. Please make your plans to tune in and listen to that. Your feedback is always appreciated. Kurlansky's turning into one of those Eric Larson / Simon Winchester kind of authors for us, who just seems to find topics that I'm interested in and then write great books about them. So may their tribe increase. Most of my time, though, today, I wanted to spend talking about romance novels, and especially I wanted to talk about The Shadow of the Wind by Carlos Ruiz Zafón, and I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Zafón is a Spanish writer. His book is translated from the Spanish. I call it a romance novel because it's mostly about romance. There's also a lot of mystery. There's a lot of intrigue. There's a lot of all kinds of things. Usually when I think of romance novels, I think of 150 pages and bodice rippers and things like that. And this isn't that kind of book at all, but I suspect it would probably fit the general category of a romance. It's about a boy and a deep, deep love he had in his teen years that formed his entire world, and how he found his way into this world of intrigue involving a hidden library and a book that he found there, and the author of the book, and the back history of that author and the connection that he had with the author and his family had with the author, etc. It's deep and involved. It's 500 pages worth reading. I will put it that way. A lot of books kind of overstay their welcome. This is the second long book, and I define long book by 500 pages or longer. This is the second one that I've read this year, and I liked it okay. It was all right. I read the entire thing, so there's that. I would not necessarily go back for more because it was more of the romance thing probably than I was anticipating. This book, though, didn't really work for me, and I think it's because romance novels in general don't work for me. And if they work for you, then that's great. But I do have a word or two of, let's just call it caution, to issue with regard to these sorts of books. And you can take my experience and wisdom for whatever it might be worth. It strikes me that we live in a world of unrealistic expectations, and our entertainment world feeds into that mentality, maybe even created that mentality. I don't know. But when we have people going to the movies and reading books and watching television and seeing idealized versions, extreme versions, can't go wrong versions, etc., of regular human relationships and situations and such, I fear that we breed a certain expectation of that same sort of lifestyle coming into our own lives, or maybe even a resentment that it's not. Now, I'm talking about the good stuff here, of course, not the bad stuff. There's plenty of bad stuff, too. But somehow we have this tendency to ignore all of the negative repercussions of the mistakes that people make in their lives, the Romeo and Juliet stories, that sort of thing, and kind of move past that and embrace the wrong lessons, what I'm calling anyway, the wrong lessons. I think I touched on this a little bit last week when I was talking about the other 500-page book that I'd read. But let me embellish on this a little bit. I fear that we have bought into the idea of, in a best-case scenario, happily ever after, which I think is dangerous enough as it is, breeding the idea that if boy meets girl and all the stars are aligned, as it were, then good things are bound to happen, couldn't help but happen. Like, we don't have any choice in the matter. Like, all of this is predetermined somehow. There's a special person for you, and you just need to keep looking until you find that person. And we have an entire generation of people, especially women, no offense, ladies, in their 30s or even 40s, who are still holding out hope that their vision of the world that they learned from Meg Ryan and they learned from Nicholas Sparks and all of these other media icons, if you will, these lessons that they were teaching and teaching prominently and that we were paying good bucks and spending good money to teach ourselves. Does that mean that the whole genre is a waste? No, I'm not saying that. Nor am I saying that similar problems with male-oriented genres are irrelevant or not as significant as the ones we find on the female side. I give you an example or two, like Westerns, for instance, or superhero movies, or cop movies, or buddy movies, or whatever other male-oriented genre you might want to talk about. The same kind of idealized vision of the world is presented there. We need a superhero. We need somebody who can bend the rules and whose ethics are unimpeachable. Usually they're named Jack, by the way, in the modern day, it seems like. It's either Jack Bauer or Jack Ryan or these days Jack Reacher. There's something powerful about that name that makes us think this guy obviously knows what's going on. Or at least the authors seem to think that's the case. And me, I'm not so sure. I think that, yes, it is great to have heroes. I think it's great to have high expectations and hopes that the world might turn out okay, that there could be a happy ending at the end. But if we're not careful, we can breed this notion that we are owed a happy ending somehow, that things have gone horribly wrong if things don't go unbelievably right in our private lives. And I think we need to watch ourselves with regard to that. I'm not suggesting that you can't read a romance novel or you can't watch a superhero movie or anything like that. That's not my place. You make your decisions for yourself. But I do suggest that this escapist notion, and that's usually the excuse we use for ourselves when we're indulging in this kind of thing too much. It's just escapism. This is not my life. I realize it's not my life. I don't want it to be my life. This is just escapism. It has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with my day-to-day. Well, maybe. But maybe we could make a point in our escape while we are finding a better world, while we are finding better relationships, etc. Could we make a point of finding a positive, if not Bible-centered, at least Bible-parallel lesson to derive? Could we learn that we have to sacrifice for the common good sometimes? Could we learn that other people's welfare is more important than our own? Whatever other kind of lesson you might want to talk about, if it's just a matter of I'm going to move heaven and earth, as it were, to make sure that the love of my life is mine and remains mine for all time, we can and we must do better than that. Escapism, if we're not very careful, can turn into discouragement, discontent, even rebellion against the current situation, which you may have extremely limited power over. To a very real extent, we are forced to deal with the world that is handed to us. Maybe you have a certain amount of control over this. Maybe you can exercise some control and make some good decisions, and by all means, do that. But for the rest of it, the stuff that's outside your control, the stuff that is governed by government or society at large or Hollywood or whatever other larger-than-life force you might want to talk about, when those factors are making choices for us, let's find a way back to Jesus. Let's find a way back to our core principles and don't allow these outside forces to subtly and gradually, but definitely, alter the way that we look at the world and alter the way that we look at our responsibilities and our relationships in the world. Don't buy into this notion that it's all about your heart and go where your heart is taking you. And if your relationship in your teens didn't work out, then your life is absolutely ruined. Or you just hold out hope for 50 years that maybe he's going to come crawling back to you, or whatever other misguided notion we may get out of our reading list, out of our movies, that may make for outstanding entertainment, but a pretty rotten series of life choices. Choose Jesus instead. Choose his pattern for your life. Allow him to guide you wherever you happen to be. Dig in and find those lessons God is trying to give you every day. Thank you for being there, and God bless. Thank you for listening to the Citizen of Heaven podcast. Please rate, review, and share so others can access this content. I encourage you also to join the Heaven Citizens Facebook group. There you will find links to related materials, conversation starters, poll questions, and the occasional special announcement. Also, check out the Hal Hammonds channel on YouTube for even more content. Until next time, be strong and courageous, fight the good fight of faith, and do all things in the name of the Lord Jesus. This is Hal Hammonds, Citizen of Heaven, signing off.